chiefship of the Journal on Clinical Trials as the first thing on your CV under your editorships, and you mentioned it today in your direct as one of your qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you had that position?
That is since 2004.
Your CV says since 2003.
I was appointed in 2003, but they didn't officially take it. Well, let's see, what's today? No, I think it was since 2004, because the journal, what happens was it's a society journal, and it changed its name and publisher in 2004, I believe, and that's when I took over. It was the same journal, but I was appointed in 2003, so maybe there's a slight discrepancy there.
And it is the Journal of the Society for Clinical Trials. That's the official name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Society for Clinical Trials, is that based in England, or?
No, it's actually it's an international society, but the main office happens to be in Baltimore, it involves folks from government, from industry, from academia, interested in clinical research methods in general, not just clinical trials.
Do you ever have to go to meetings on behalf of your? I mean, as part of your job as editor in chief?
Yes, I just came back from one yesterday or on Wednesday.
And does the society pay for your travel in those instances?
No.
You have to pay for it yourself?
Yep.
Do you get any staff support? Do you get any staff support to run this journal?
I have a managing editor that's paid for by the publisher, just 20% of her time.
There are corporate sponsors of the journal, aren't there?
No.
Of the society?
No. Oh, of the society? Not formal sponsors. I think they get corporate contributions to their meetings, but it's not a corporate society by any means. But I think when I was just at the meeting, they had a list of contributors, and it included both academic and corporate sponsors.
We have a page.
Oh, there it is. Yes,
page from the website here. I just wanted to point out that two of the corporate sponsors of the Society for Clinical Trials are major manufacturers of vaccines. Did you know that?
I didn't. I honestly don't pay attention to who helped support the meeting. No, but I did know that there were corporate manufacturers. I mean, I did know that there were that they get some money to help support the meeting. Yeah.
Do you ever do consultancy with drug companies on clinical trials, independent of the role as editor in chief?
I may have in the past on the design of clinical trials, but honestly, I don't recall. I might have visited a company about 8 or 10 years ago about design of a clinical trial, but I don't honestly recall. I think I did, but I don't remember what the trial was, and I don't honestly even remember what the company was.
When the 2004 IOM report that you talked about, mm-hmm. There's a statement in there that says that none of the members of the committee had any conflict of interest.
That's right.
And you don't consider having vaccine manufacturers as the sponsor of the society that publishes your journal to be a conflict?
Well, they support. They support the meeting. They don't support the society specifically. We are completely, this has no bearing on the activities of the society. No. The answer is no.
Okay. When you picked the astrology example,
mm-hmm.
We didn't have a report yet from Dr. Kinsborn. Have you read his report?
I've looked through it, yes, but I haven't. I can't say that I read it carefully or that I have that I'm expert in that area.
And I take it you haven't reviewed the infant monkey study. It shows the inorganic mercury goes to the brains.
I read the study. Yes, again, I'm not expert in this area. I didn't notice that they connected this with autism. It seemed that there was a study about the entry of mercury into the brain of these infant monkeys.
Is it still your opinion today that the biological plausibility that thimerosal-containing vaccines could cause regressive autism in some kids is as silly as astrology?
I never said it was as silly, but I said in order to elevate that to from the possible, I don't acknowledge, I don't say that it's not literally impossible, to the probable takes a combination of both empirical counting knowledge and a more complete or more accepted theory than we have today.
But you haven't analyzed Dr. Kinsborn's paper or I mean his report or the underlying studies that he cited.
Well, I rely on the scientific community to judge whether that hypothesis that he has published, has he published that? I'm sorry.
He hasn't published
it. Well, the scientific community then hasn't weighed in on that. I would depend on them. And if I was part of a committee assessing the body of evidence, I would look at both his published paper and I would look at the response of the scientific community to that paper to decide how much weight to give it. I wouldn't necessarily be the expert evaluator myself.
You realize that in this vaccine court that we're in, that it's very rare that the cases get written up and published in the peer-reviewed literature, don't you?
What cases?
The cases that these special masters hear about alleged injuries from vaccines.
Right, but I assume that the underlying principles upon which you are making a judgment are principles that have relevant science that appears in the scientific literature.
You in the four or five studies that the IOM committee had in 2004, most of them were ecological studies, weren't they?
There were three controlled studies. I think there were five altogether. Two or three were ecological studies, and two or three were controlled studies. Yes, that's right.
And in your report, you state that the studies taken together provide strong support that there's no causal connection between thimerosal vaccines and autism in general.
Right.
And you're using ecological studies as part of that strong support.
Yes.
You don't have any doubts about ecological studies being...
Well, I do. I mean, I think reasonable people could disagree on whether it's strong or moderate. It's still support for the hypothesis that there's no relationship. It doesn't imagine any qualms one would have. I'll talk about those in a second, about those studies wouldn't magically turn it into a positive relationship. The IOM didn't put a particular adjective on it. They said favors a no causal association. I would absolutely subscribe to that. Personally, I find the nature of the fragmentary biologic evidence and very, very consistent evidence of continued high rates in populations that get zero thimerosal in their vaccines to be fairly compelling. Now, to comment on the ecologic studies are absolutely subject to a variety of criticism and bias more than controlled studies, and they're not as strong as the controlled studies that we looked at. However, in the situation where the exposure from vaccines goes to zero, or effectively to zero, very close to zero, and rates still seem to continue completely unconnected with that, those are subject to less concern than the kinds of ecologic studies where you just have two phenomenon co-varying in a general sense. But the general point you make is right. Those are weaker studies than the controlled studies. But it certainly is extremely interesting that the autism rates are virtually unaffected and even seem to go up, at least as they're measured. I won't talk about the what the true rates are right now in a context where thimerosal exposure has gone to zero in other countries and has been very, very low here.
And I know you admitted this on direct, but just to reiterate, none of those studies tried to measure clearly regressive autism.
No, I'm not aware of the fact that I don't think they broke that out. No.
We don't really know what the rate of clearly regressive autism was in any of those countries, nor in California.
And let me point out that there's a reason why, and the reason this doesn't lessen the fact that evidence doesn't exist is that when people design studies, they measure all sorts of things. They could measure every. If we did a study in this room, we could measure the number of lights and the nature of the wood and the height of everybody at this table. We could go crazy with a data set. We can measure literally everything, but you have to restrict your the things you measure to the things that you a priori think are reasonably possible or plausible. And the reason that people didn't make that choice when they designed these studies is because this hypothesis was not out there, and there was not a strong or even existing biologic reason to distinguish between the two. So it's not a complete accident that information is not there. It's because there wasn't the biologic suggestion that would be a meaningful breakout, and it would be very, very hard methodologically, as I'm sure Dr. Fombone will testify, to make that breakout, to make that determination. It's hard, I believe, even in an individual case. Often you have to have a lot of documentary evidence to distinguish clearly regressive from non-clearly regressive. So that would be an extraordinarily difficult study to do. I'm not saying it won't or shouldn't be done. But the reason the evidence isn't there is because there wasn't the designers of the studies either couldn't get the information or be very difficult to get the information, and there was not and is not at the moment a very strong biologic reason to do so.
Have you talked to Dr. Fombone about what he's going to testify?
I've only read his expert report.
Okay. Do you have an opinion as to whether the increase in autism rates in California or elsewhere is real, or is it just an artifact of the diagnostic methods?
I would say that Dr. Fombone is far more expert than I in that area. We did look at it at the IOM. I personally believe that it is if rates are going up at all, and I think that is a question. I think there's without a doubt. They're not going up in the multiple, fives, tens that have been drawn on curves. That is almost certainly not the case. Whether they're going up at all and exactly how fast they're going up, I think, is an unsettled scientific question. And I don't have enough special expertise to distinguish between going up some and going up not at all. I believe very strongly that it's not going up in the exponential, astronomical way that has been portrayed, particularly in the lay press and to some extent in other settings. I think that's pretty certainly not the case.
In preparing for your testimony, did you review the NIEHS expert panel's report on whether and how studies could be done in the vaccine safety data link to explore the question of whether thimerosal-containing vaccines are associated with autism?
No, I did not.
Are you aware that such a report was written?
No, I'm not. When was that written?
Let me show it to you. This is... we have a copy. I can give a copy to the witness.
Do you have two?
I don't have two with me.
Dr. Goodman, we're starting to get a little feedback from
you. Oh, sorry.
I wonder if you... I'm thinking you may have gotten a little closer to the mic than you were earlier.
I'll sit back here and pump up the volume.
We're going to get a copy for this for you to look at, and you get the exhibit number. But let me... let me tell you what is just briefly what happened, and I'll show you this in the text in a second. There was the NIEHS in 2006, now almost 2 years ago, convened a panel of experts on autism and epidemiology and toxicology and asked them to. They actually spent a couple days meeting and listening and presenting on whether or not it made sense to do some studies using the vaccine safety data link to try to look for an association between thimerosal vaccines and autism.
Right. Okay.
And they actually ended up recommending that two specific studies be done.
Okay.
You weren't aware of this.
No, this is not my field.
Okay, well, let's...
So I haven't followed it. I followed the evidence to 2004. I've reviewed the epidemiologic studies since then. I have not followed all the things that have gone on since that
time. What you see in the screen now is the first page of this report. You see that it's signed by the director of NIH October of 2006.
Okay, it's very fuzzy on my screen, but I'll take your word for it. Does look like Elias Cerhouni, yes. Ah, and that's the signature.
553.
This is petitioner's master reference list, 553.
Okay.
Is the exhibit. Now, I want to turn to the page that lists the experts who were convened. It's about six pages from the back. I think you'll probably know some of them. You find it.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Okay, here it is. And blow up the top four first, Scott, and then we go to the bottom four. Do you know Dr. Hertz Picciotto?
Yes, we served on the IOM committee, Veterans Age and Orange together.
And you said you've read Dr. Burbacher's study on the monkeys, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what about the other two people there? Do you know them?
I don't know them specifically, no.
Okay, let me show you the other names. Dr. Davidson or Dr. Factor Litvak?
No.
All right, and then two more.
Well, I know Craig Neuschafer very well.
Okay.
And I don't know the other one.
And of the people that you know that are on there, do you respect them as epidemiologists?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me show you what they recommended be done in looking at the VSD. Now, this is... This page, the first page of the executive summary.
At page 7 of the exhibit, I think.
Yes, page 7 of the exhibit. And it's the last paragraph I wanted to blow up. This is from the executive summary. And it says, first of all, they were asked, could we do an ecological study just looking at the rates of autism from 1 year to another? And they decided there were too many confounders to recommend doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But they did view positively, it says, an alternate future study design that was viewed positively among panel members was a study of a high-risk population defined in this instance as siblings of individuals diagnosed with AD or ASD. And they go on to describe that. You're aware of these kinds of twin or sibling studies.
Yeah, I think this is actually a good idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a recommendation in the bottom half of this paragraph for an extension. It says, another possibility that generated support by the panel. If you could highlight that stuff right here in the middle. Yeah, there we go. Another possibility that generated support by the panel was an expansion of the VSD study published by Verstraten back in 2004. Mm-hmm. That's one of the studies that your IOM committee had relied on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what they say was the availability now of several additional years of VSD data provides an opportunity to provide a more powerful test of any potential association.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also talk about a retrospective cohort using the California MCOs or DDS. Do you agree that those studies would also be a good idea?
Probably. I mean, I'm not dealing with the budgets and trying to prioritize according to what other studies would or would not be done, but those do look like very good ideas. The IOM committee itself recommended further research in high-risk populations, and this is a good high-risk population.
Now, unfortunately, the Bush administration has not chosen to fund these studies, and they haven't begun yet. But I wanted to show you that the petitioner steering committee did try to get access to this. Let me show you a motion that we filed in this litigation, in this court, back in 06, right after this expert report came out. Did you know that we had filed a motion on behalf of the families? We represent about 5,000 families.
No, I don't.
And that we had a panel of Dr. Greenland, mm-hmm. Dr. Kinsmore, Eric Gershwin from UC Davis, mm-hmm. and
Your Honor, I'm just going to ask for a proffer of the relevance of this. I believe this motion has already been ruled on by the court.
Well, it has. I'll give him a little latitude here.
Well, wouldn't you agree that one of the reasons we don't have epidemiological studies that address the question at hand here is because the government has blocked us from getting those studies?
Well,
though they've been recommended by an NIH expert panel.
I have no basis on which to render an opinion on that.
And I'd actually have to object to that characterization.
Well, it's already been answered, so.
Well, I just meant to object to that characterization of what the government has done.
I just want to say one thing in my comment that I thought it was a good idea. I have no information about how much it would cost, what the choices are really to be made. In theory, if we had a good study of those, maybe it could provide interesting information, but I have no access to any of the real world considerations that went into any of the things that you're discussing.
Now, you said that this postulated group of affected kids that have clearly regressive autism from thimerosal-containing vaccines would be a small group, you said.
Yes, I followed exactly what Dr. Fambon and Dr. Greenland said.
I want to just do one little
small portion of the total group.
Right.
Yes.
I'll do just a little arithmetic with you, and then mm-hmm. we'll be done. There were roughly 4 million kids born every year in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You accept that? I mean, would be a little.
I would believe you.
Okay. And if you take the decade of kids from 1992 to 2001 or so who got the biggest exposure from thimerosal-containing vaccines, we're talking on roughly 40 million children in this country. If the true rate of autism of all types was 1 in 150, which seems to be the number you hear most, then if the thimerosal-containing vaccines were causing 10% of that, could cause 10% of the total,
mm-hmm.
Which is the figure you sort of used as a compromise between.
I was just working off the numbers that were in the report.
Right. And you said it didn't really matter whether it's 6% or 10% because that's still too small for the studies at hand to pick up.
Yes, the relevant number is the proportion of the total, because we have relative risks that apply to the whole population. So you're absolutely right. That proportion could apply to many, many, many children, but it doesn't make the math related to the relative risks and what can fit in. It doesn't change that at all. It doesn't matter whether that's 10 kids or 10 million, except if it's 10 million, you at least theoretically have the possibility of getting sample sizes to explore it.
Well, if it was 10%, then the number of kids in the population who would have thimerosal-containing vaccine-related autism would be 1 in 1,500. Is that fair?
Well, I'll just listen to your math. I'm not following all the numbers. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me just summarize.
I mean, you assume that it caused all of it. No.
Now I'm assuming that, let's take another assumption, that the thimerosal-containing vaccines are only causing about one-third of the of this purely regressive group.
Okay.
So now we're down to, from a population point of view, of 1 in 4,500.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do the math, 40 million divided by 4,500, you come up with about 9,000 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you still think that's a small group?
The reference small is the proportion of the total population, and had to do with the mathematics of what you could detect given the relative risks that we're observing. The small did not, I never meant to, nor did I make any statement about the size of the problem or the number of children affected. I think it's quite clear that autism is a very, very big problem in this country. It doesn't matter, actually, whether the rates are going up or flat. You know, one in 150 or one in 400 is actually a very high rate for a problem of this magnitude. So issues related to autism are important for exactly that reason.
And issues related to trying to figure out the etiology of autism are important.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Any question for this witness? Actually, I have one or two, Doctor. Now, you mentioned earlier that you had read the report of Dr. Kinsborn.
I looked through it. I wouldn't read through. I mean, it's not my area of expertise, and I was also aware, and if...
You haven't studied it.
No, I had definitely have not studied it.
My question is, the way I read Dr. Kinsborn's report, I think, accurately characterized what Dr. Greenland said. Dr. Kinsborn went a little further than Dr. Greenland. As I read his opinion, I don't know if he used the word irrelevant, but essentially he says, because all these studies studied autistics in general and didn't focus on regressive autism, he said the studies are totally irrelevant to the petitioner's theory here, which is focusing on causation of regressive autism.
Right.
And I want to make sure I understood what you said today in terms of that issue. If I understood your testimony, and I want to summarize it and see if I've accurately understood it, you're saying that it is relevant because the studies don't mathematically rule out the possibility that there could be a very, very small subgroup that's highly associated. But you're saying it makes it seem... Because regressive autism, we don't see anything distinctly biologically different than non-regressive autism, that it makes it seem very unlikely that there is an association with such a subgroup, because we don't have any reason biologically to assume that there would be a difference.
That's pretty much exactly it. That is the information on the overall relationship to autism in general and thimerosal is relevant to all children with autism until one can make and show, demonstrate empirically, that one subgroup is uniquely biologically different with respect to that causal factor. So it's certainly relevant. It's only irrelevant insofar as he can empirically demonstrate, that is, show that this is a unique biologic entity that's uniquely susceptible to thimerosal, where all other children with autism are not. So you described it pretty much exactly.
All right. Anything based on that?
Just one question about exactly this. It wouldn't have to, for there to be biological plausibility of progressive autism being different, it wouldn't have to be just thimerosal that could cause it. You could have other postnatal insults that could cause progressive autism, and it'd still be biologically plausible, right?
I'm sorry, what would be biologically plausible?
That there is a susceptible subgroup of children who develop regressive autism from postnatal exposures to agents that persist in the brain and cause neuroinflammation.
First of all, I can't opine on that particular mechanism. It just there's a difference between biologically possible and biologically probable. So I can't opine on that. All I can say is that particular theory is not yet, you know, out in the scientific literature, and other scientists haven't weighed in on it. I can't disprove it here. No, nor does the epidemiology disprove it. Maybe I'm not addressing your question. I'm sorry.
Well, for example, Sir Michael Rutter is going to come in here next week, and he's published his opinion that he believes some cases of autism are regressive because mm-hmm. they're caused by postnatal infections. Right. Can happen. He thinks it's biologically plausible.
I'm not sure that's an accurate characterization of Professor.
Well, let's suppose for a minute that it is. I understand the objection. Did you understand the question?
Not entirely, but I'm being dense.
I'm hearing you say that there just is nobody who thinks it's biologically plausible that a postnatal agent could cause regressive autism.
No, I absolutely didn't say that. I said the question that the special master posed was that Dr. Kinsporn said that the extant evidence was, in a sense, totally irrelevant to that particular hypothesis because they hadn't broken out specifically the regressive autistic types. And I said, and then he summarized his view of my testimony as saying it was relevant because there hadn't been a clear enough case made that this is a distinct biologic entity. And I agreed. I'm not testifying here today that and that there aren't people who say, or that it might not be true, that some environmental insult might play a part in the expression or emergence of autistic symptoms. That's actually documented, but it's stated repeatedly in the literature that that's one of many possibilities.
Thanks.
Anything further from Ms. Riccardella? Any further questions from the special masters? All right. I guess we're done with you, Dr. Goodman. We thank you very much for being with us today. Before we go off the record here, I understood that the council had some matters they wanted to raise before we broke for the weekend. Now, I'm not sure what they were, and does anyone want to do those on the record, or do you want to do it back in chambers? Tell me what's going on here.
I was the one who raised there were a couple of matters to take up. I don't think they need to be taken up on the record.
All right. If that's the case, we're going to break for the weekend. For those listening in, we are done now. Until Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. We'll be adjourned till then. All right. Thank you all.